I have endeavoured in this ghostly little podcast to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my listeners out of humour with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly, and no one wish to lay it. Their faithful friend and servant, Jacklington Fordhampton III, December 2022.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, it's just me and my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. It's Christmas. It was Christmas last episode. It's Christmas this episode, and it's fantastic. It's so good to have you here. I forgot to do the interactive bit last episode, so let's do it now. Are you ready? Here it comes. Merry Christmas. How are you? I know, isn't it wonderful? Yeah, I'm having a great time. And you look so festive in your jumper there. Oh, it's so good to see you. Thanks for coming. Should we get on with the show? Okay, yeah, no, great. Thanks for coming. Come, sit down. Have a glass of mulled wine. Do something. How was that one? Could have been worse, couldn't it? I'm really excited, kids. I really am. I know the tree was up last week. Christmas had already started. It's just so good, though. It's so nice to be here with you to celebrate Christmas in your ears at Christmas time. Here I am in your ears. Dancing. I'm dancing a Christmas jig in your ears. You can't. This is my feet. Listen. Can you hear that? That's my feet. It's not. It's me tapping my hands on my knee. But you get the idea, don't you? So first up, I know you're all dying to know what's going on with my book. Well, since the last episode, I've sold 9 copies now. So yeah, it's flying off the shelves. I think I only need like 1 or 2 more and I should make it to the top of the New York Times bestseller list. So what's interesting is some people can read it through Kindle Unlimited and I can see how many pages are read each day, right? And someone read 30 pages one day and then they read 50 pages the next day and then nothing for like 3 days. And it's like, what, you're giving up after 80 pages? Just do the rest. They're not 250 pages. You can do it. Anyway, that's what's happening. Not sold many. Not that bothered about it. But if you want to read it, I'm going to keep plugging it. So, you know, might as well just humour me. It's Thursday Night's Alright by Jack Andrews. It's $3 or £2.50 on Amazon. It's only available as an ebook. And if you want to get a copy, do it. Or don't. It's your life. Live it your way. Anyway, one thing I want to say quickly. I don't know if you've had a watch yet of the new Netflix Christmas Carol version. They've got the computer animated one. It's a sort of a remake, but not a full-on remake of the Albert Finney version, which I covered about a year and a bit ago. I think it was episode 38, might not have been. I've watched it twice, actually. I watched it once, and then the girls wanted to watch it again. So it's like, okay, chuck it on. I'll review it at a later stage, but I can't say it's the best I've ever seen. I was kind of hoping more from it. That's all I'll say at this point. Anyway, if you haven't checked it out, give it a gander, though. But there's better versions out there. Watch the Alistair Sim one. I did it, okay? So every year, I watch the Alistair Sim version and drink mulled wine, and I did it last Friday, and I can't lie to you, kids. It was glorious. I just sat there in the moment watching that film from start to finish. To my shame, the version I've got on DVD is the colourised version. And I'm not proud of that, but that's the one I've got. That's the one I go with. I watch it every year, and every year I just love it. And the funny thing is, it's in black and white on YouTube. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't. I was kind of worried there might be adverts through it, and that really would take me out of it. But also, it's like I'm so used to the colourised version, I wasn't sure how I'd film. I am ashamed of that, though. I am a bit ashamed. Not massively ashamed, because I'm telling you, you know, it's not a secret. There's one other film that I like to do the same thing with, where I sit and just spend my time on my own watching that film, drinking my wine. And that is called Christmas Again. I've mentioned it twice before. I'm mentioning it again. This is the third time. It's one of my favourite Christmas films. I'd like to watch it every year. I've only been watching it about 4 years, I think. But it's just fantastic. It's called Christmas Again, and it's about a guy that sells Christmas trees. It's really slow. Very little happens in it, but it's just a wonderful film. If you haven't seen it, I will put a link in the show notes. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere. I remember it was streaming a couple of years ago on Amazon, but not on Amazon in the UK. I ended up watching it on some dodgy site. I'm not proud of that, but then I went out and bought a copy of the DVD, so I was proud of that. But yeah, Christmas Again is directed by Charles Pokel, and I interviewed him for an episode about 2 years ago, and we had a really good chat about it. If you haven't checked out that episode, I think the episode is called Christmas Again from about 2 years ago. Have a gander at it. Please check out the film Christmas Again. You might hate it and you might think, oh, that's 90 minutes of my life wasted. But then again, you might love it as much as I do. You have to give it your full attention. It's a really subtle film, but I loved it. Anyway, that's enough of that. Let's get straight in with the show with this.
I'm singing, I'm in a store, and I'm singing. I'm in a store, and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Yes, there is.
No, it's not.
We sing all the time.
No, it's not.
Especially when we make toys.
Boys and girls, I received an email from a gentleman by the name of Nate Hance, and this is what it says. I am a pianist in the Twin Cities. I wanted to reach out as I think the Total Christmas podcast listeners might enjoy my take on the music of Vince Guaraldi in my new album, A Charlie Brown Christmas Enhanced. The enhanced is like N for Nate and enhanced. You get it. And it says, a little bit about me. As a lover of most musical genres, I realise that jazz can appear elitist and inaccessible to non-jazz fans. My mission for this album was to make jazz music enjoyable for all audiences by adding my own twist to some of the classics. My trio did just that, with funk arrangements of Linus and Lucy and Watch Old Is This, and making every song an enjoyable listening experience. And then he sent me a couple of links to his music, and I had a listen, and it was really good. Really enjoyed it. And if you're a fan of A Charlie Brown Christmas and its soundtrack, then I think you'll get a real kick out of listening to this. And I'm going to play a bit for you now. So, here we go. So that was just a short snippet. If you want to listen to the whole thing, check out the links in the show notes, and I'll also put something up on Facebook, and that is Nate Hance. He's also got a website, natehance.com, and I'm sure you can find him on social media and all that sort of thing. So yeah, check it out. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Lovely bit of background music, you know, when you're watching your Yule log on TV and drinking mulled wine, I think. Thanks for sending that through, Nate.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
This is the first segment this episode from our dear friend Bob Baker. I think he's done a fantastic amount of research on this one, boys and girls. I'm really impressed. So, yeah, let's take it away. Happy Christmas.
Here's to a holiday full of Christmas spirits, like gin, vodka, and whiskey. Remember, these have better results than mistletoe. So you hear a lot about the popular animated film, The Snowman, based on the Raymond Briggs book. It is wonderful, but there is another Briggs book and movie that I enjoy even more. It is Father Christmas. This is a charming story where he lives in a normal house in Britain. He lives with his pets and reindeer, and there are no elves or Mrs. Claus. He is grumpy and complains, but he really does seem to love what he does. Upon returning home after Christmas Eve, he opens his own presents. He has presents for his cat and dog. He sings carols in the shower, and he wishes the reader happy bloomin' Christmas. And this is where we land for our last Do You Hear What I Hear for the holiday season. Happy Christmas. In America, we don't say this at all. We will say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays, but never Happy Christmas. I know that in England, you also say Merry Christmas, but I hear Happy Christmas just as often. So I wonder, why the difference? I mean, you were singing We Wish You a Merry Christmas in the 16th century, and Nephew Fred tells Scrooge to have a Merry Christmas in 1843. If Merry Christmas is traditional and has been around for centuries, why say happy versus merry? The answer is in the interpretation of the words over time. They seem to be synonyms. However, the term merry once meant delightful and joyous, but later came to mean rowdy or boisterous. At the same time, happy originally meant lucky or fortunate, but later evolved to mean pleasing or contented. The royal family played a significant role in making Happy Christmas popular, using happy because it had a higher class and more reserved connotation than the vulgar and common merry. Early church leaders in Great Britain also encouraged their followers to simply be happy in their celebrations, rather than to engage in merrymaking. So whether you plan to be merry, indicating a tipsy event, or happy, reflecting a more restrained experience, make it your best. Enjoy yourself unconditionally. While we don't have the same challenges of Victorian England, we do have different stresses or concerns today. So spread good cheer and do it the best way you can. To quote our friend, the Ghost of Christmas Present, make sure that it is kindly given and that it goes to those who need it most. I believe this is what Jack tries to do with Total Christmas, and I am so proud to be part of it. Cheers and happy, merry Christmas.
I won't lie to you, when I got the email through from Bob with the attachment, I thought, oh, he thinks we say Happy Christmas all the time. But he doesn't. He knows that we do say Merry Christmas as well. It's probably, I'd say, more Merry Christmas than Happy Christmas. But yeah, sort of almost 50-50, but swaying in the direction of Merry Christmas, I'd say. But thank you so much for that segment, Bob. You've done a blinding job. He'll be back again later in the show. But right now, it's this. Boys and girls, two episodes ago, I had Scott Newman on the show, and it was a yearly tradition where I play him classic British Christmas songs, and he tells me if he's ever heard them before or not. It was an interesting one. I played five songs for him. I think he'd heard of two of them. But yeah, it might have been three, actually. I think it was a big year. Anyway, we talked about him playing some classic American songs for me. He keeps saying he's going to do it. It may happen one day, but in the meantime, I got an email from listener Timothy Lewis, and this is what it says. It says, it's Saturday evening here in Kansas. My wife has been playing Christmas music all day, and I see that your latest episode just dropped. As you have introduced me to many British Christmas songs, I wonder if you are familiar with what we would consider standards. So forgive me if you know of these, but I thought I might give you a short list of American Christmas classics. So he sent me five songs, and this is the first one.
Maybe I'll sleep. Maybe I'll lose some weight. Maybe I'll clear my junk. Maybe I'll just get drunk on apple wine. Me, I'll be just fine dandy. Lord, it's like a hard candy Christmas. I'm barely getting through tomorrow, but still
okay, so that was Hard Candy Christmas by Dolly Parton. And have I heard of that song before? No. Well, here's the thing, right? It didn't ring any bells to me. I listened to it twice. Second, I don't recognise this song at all. But then I looked into it further, and on IMDb, this was part of the soundtrack of The Littlest Whorehouse in Texas. Now, I do remember watching that film years ago, late at night when my parents had gone to bed and I stayed up to watch it, and they didn't know I was watching it because I was a bad boy. Annoyingly, you'd think it was going to be full of naked ladies. It wasn't, okay? I was about 15 then, and I remember the disappointment that there was hardly any naked ladies in it. So I guess I have heard that song before, but it clearly didn't register with me because 30 odd years later, I didn't recognise it. So this is the second one. Here it comes.
By now in New York City, there's snow on the ground. And out in California, the sunshine's falling down. And maybe down in Memphis, Graceland. is all in lights. And in Atlanta, Georgia, there's peace on earth tonight. Christmas in Dixie, it's snowing in the pines. Merry Christmas from Dixie to everyone tonight.
So this song is called Christmas in Dixie by Alabama. And have I heard of this song? The answer is no. No, never heard of it at all. Never. So there's not much else I can say about it. Next up, we've got this one.
Come on, weatherman, give us a forecast, snowy white. Can't you hear the of every childlike heart tonight? Rockies are calling, Denver snow falling. Somebody said it's 4 feet deep, but it doesn't matter. Give me the laughter, I'm gonna choose to keep another tender Tennessee. The only Christmas for me, where the love circles around us like the gifts around our tree. Well, I know there's more snow up in Colorado than my roof will ever see. But a tender Tennessee Christmas, the only Christmas for me.
So that one was Tennessee Christmas by Amy Grant. I've got to say, I like Amy Grant, I like her stuff, and I particularly like her version of Sleigh Ride. So I remember doing up a playlist years ago, and that was the version of Sleigh Ride I chose. But the one that I've got at the moment, I think, is The Crystals. But to be honest, Amy Grant's is good because it's got like all the extra verses in it. Have I heard of that song before, Tennessee Christmas? The answer is no. Let's play the next one.
The billboards and the neon took the place of silver bells, and the temperature is 84 degrees. I can hear the traffic on the crowded strip below as the palm trees poke their heads above the scene. But there's not a single reindeer, and it hardly ever snows, and Santa drives a Rolls Royce limousine. But all along the Rockies you can feel it in the air, until you ride to Boulder down below. The closest thing to heaven on this planet is a quiet Christmas morning in the Colorado snow.
Okay, that one was called Colorado Christmas by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. Have I heard of that song before? No. So far, I've got 0 out of 4. No, never heard of it. Never heard of it at all. Not a bad song, you know, but no, never heard of it. And this last one, Timothy's put, and not really a national classic, but a personal favourite. Here it comes.
Now, baby doll, sweet pie, sugar plum, honey bun, angel face, you know you better be good. And act like true fine love you should. Be careful what you say and do, 'cause Santa Claus is watching you.
He's everywhere, he's everywhere.
You better kiss me and hold me tight, give me good loving every night, 'cause you'd be sorry if you made me blue, 'cause Santa Claus is watching you.
He's everywhere, he's everywhere.
And that was Santa Claus is Watching You by Ray Stevens. And have I heard of that song before? No, Nope, nope. I'm ashamed of myself. Not that ashamed, but a little bit. But I did look up all of these songs, right? And I checked on IMDb to see if any of them had been on movies, apart from that Hard Candy Christmas. None of them had. So I'm hoping they are proper national classics in the States. But sadly, nope, never heard of any of them. Have I let myself down? You be the judge. But I want to say a massive thank you to Timothy Lewis for taking the time to send those through. Yeah, I really appreciate it, Timothy. Merry Christmas. Now it's time for this. Stories about St. Nicholas. Yeah, that jingle. I'm doing my best, kids. It was just... move on. This is our segment where Scott Newman, the host of the Christmas Morning Podcast and Tinsel Tunes, I've been listening every day to the Christmas Morning Podcast. It's just a nice way to start your day. You know, December seems like such a short month. It just flies by. But every day, if you sort of kickstart your day with a shot of Christmas, it's a 20-minute show where they just talk about Christmas. I highly recommend it. Keep up the good work, Scott. Scott is going to be telling another story about the life and times of the real St. Nicholas. So, take it away, Scott.
In AD 325, Emperor Constantine convened the Council of Nicaea, the first ecumenical council. More than 300 bishops came from all over the Christian world to debate the nature of the Holy Trinity. It was one of the early church's most intense theological questions. Arius from Egypt was teaching that Jesus the Son was not equal to God the Father. Arius forcefully argued his position at length. The bishops listened respectfully. As Arius vigorously continued, Nicholas became more and more agitated. Finally, he could no longer bear what he believed was essential being attacked. The outraged Nicholas got up, crossed the room, and slapped Arius across the face. The bishops were shocked. It was unbelievable that a bishop would lose control and be so hot-headed in such a solemn assembly. They brought Nicholas to Constantine. Constantine said that even though it was illegal for anyone to strike another in his presence, in this case the bishops themselves must determine the punishment. The bishops stripped Nicholas of his bishop's garments, chained him, and threw him into jail. That would keep Nicholas away from the meeting. When the council ended, a final decision would be made about his future. Nicholas was ashamed and prayed for forgiveness, though he did not waver in his belief. During the night, Jesus and Mary his mother appeared, asking, "Why are you in jail?" "Because of my love for you," Nicholas replied. Jesus then gave the book of the Gospels to Nicholas. Mary gave him an amphorion, so Nicholas would again be dressed as a bishop. Now at peace, Nicholas studied the scriptures for the rest of the night. When the jailer came in the morning, he found the chains loose on the floor and Nicholas dressed in bishop's robes, quietly reading the scriptures. When Constantine was told of this, the emperor asked that Nicholas be freed. Nicholas was then fully reinstated as the bishop of Myra. The Council of Nicaea agreed with Nicholas's views, deciding the question against Arius. The work of the council produced the Nicene Creed, which to this day many Christians repeat weekly when they stand to say what they believe.
See, this is the thing, okay? You should never argue about religion or politics. Otherwise, you could get a slap around the face from Father Christmas. That's pretty much what that story teaches us. So thank you so much, Scott, for sending that one through. And now it's time for this. Boys and girls, it's that time of the show where I tell you a joke and you groan. So, prepare to groan. What did Adam say to his girlfriend the day before Christmas? "It's Christmas Eve." I'm trying. I am trying. I know you don't think I am. I know you don't think I'm trying at all. I am trying. Let's just, yeah. Boys and girls, this is the third time we've done this segment and we'll be talking again to the wonderful Shelley Arnold, and she has got the most amazing Christmas village. Each year she puts it up. It takes her a long time to put it up and it's just phenomenal. I'm putting links on Facebook so you can check it out for yourself, because when we talk in the interview, doesn't really come across just how lovely this Christmas village is. So please do check out the pictures and videos because they are something else to behold. So here's the interview. Boys and girls, we are joined now with the wonderful Shelley Arnold, and she is the owner of a fantastic Christmas village. I also have two expert podcasters that are going to be asking some questions. So, Shelley, can you say hello?
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
And girls, are you going to say hello?
Hello.
Girls, do you want to ask Shelley? Robin, are you going to ask Shelley the first question then?
Have you added any more pieces to your display?
Yes, I have. Let's see. I've added a billboard, and the billboard is right here. You can see it says Red Owl on it.
Oh, I can see the eyes of the owl.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see the eyes.
So when I was growing up in our little town here in Cedarville, our grocery store was called the Red Owl.
I see.
Yes, it's now called Cedarville Foods, but it used to be the Red Owl. And I've added the Griswold semi-truck with his car. You can see the semi-truck with Clark's car underneath.
Oh, here. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a big truck with the logs on the back, and underneath it,
it's
Clark's car. Yeah, that's from Christmas Vacation.
We also have Clark's fantasy swimming pool.
Oh, wow. Right there. It's just there. Yeah, I see it.
Oh, yeah.
Now
we're moving over to New York now. Do you see, girls?
Oh, yeah, it's New York.
Got the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
The world's largest store.
Mm-hmm. You can see the little guy flying his kite with his dad.
Oh, do you see the kite there?
Yeah.
Just here. The kite's flying.
Oh, yeah.
And what else do we have new this year? Let's see. We have a couple of townhouses in the back of New York City that are new.
Is this from Elf, or is this just general New York City stuff?
This is all just Department 56 Christmas in the City.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've added another track, and so there's two tracks of cars, and you'll see the cars going around here.
Oh, there we go. When we spoke last year, you were sort of thinking that might have been it, but you've actually still kept it increasing. This is good.
Yeah,
I don't remember the cars last year. I remember the trains, but I don't remember there being cars. You had cars last year.
Yeah, there was just one track though.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think
just
I remember
one track.
Yeah, I remember trains and cars.
And then I've added more to my parade.
Oh.
And I have one more piece that I just bought this weekend that I'm going to add to my parade. I'm going to try to work on it today. And it is this ornament, and I'm going to have it suspended just like they do in the Macy's Day Parade, where they're
like a balloon.
Yeah,
girls, you're gonna say what the ornament is?
Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse.
You're gonna suspend that above the parade.
Yeah,
but girls, you've got to describe what you're seeing now because the listeners can't see it. So, to explain what you can see.
So right now we can see like this big Christmas tree, and there's also this big parade. People, there's a seesaw that has people on it, and it's moving up and down. We can see some little Christmas trees.
You're not selling it, girls. There's a train track. There's dozens of houses. Do you know how many houses you've got on there, Shelley?
I do. I have 126 buildings.
Oh,
wow.
That is a lot.
120. Is that just in the bit in the office, or is that including Whoville?
No, that's just in the office.
Oh, wow. And that's just buildings. So you're not is that pieces? So what about like the fairground rides we can see at the back? Is that included?
Yeah, that's counted towards the 126. So I have 126 buildings or like carnival. And I think I have 24 animated pieces, like the seesaw.
Uh-huh.
And then over here, they're playing tug of war.
Yeah, look at that. He's going backwards and forwards.
I've had a couple of visitors, so we have a couple of trees down. Then this little girl here is making a snow angel.
Oh, wow, that is really good.
Yeah, and then these little guys here are on their sleds.
Oh, that is good. I like
They're
that.
Sliding around.
Oh, there's a train track over there.
Yep. And then in the back, you can see the swans are swimming.
Hang on. Where's the swans are swimming? Oh, I see it. Can you see it at the back there? Look there.
In the center.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
There's like this big slope.
There's so much going on.
That's the ski hill.
The ski hill.
Yeah. And I'm going to try next year to fit in a campground somewhere.
A campground?
Yeah.
Is it not a bit cold for camping?
Frank and I love to go camping. That's what we're going to do when he's retired.
We'll spend more time camping?
Yes.
I see. Oh, there we go. Yeah. It's glorious. So, Juno's got another question.
How many people have been to see this village this year?
We've only had 5 visitors this year so far, but our open house is this weekend on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Oh, so you haven't done the open house bit yet then?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
So how many are you expecting on the weekend, do you think then, Shelley?
It could be quite a bit. We have a lot of people who have shared it on Facebook and a lot of response. So I'm not exactly sure how many we're going to have, but I'm ready. I have an I Spy game.
Oh, so people get a sheet of paper and they've got to find all the things in the village?
Yeah. And then we have prizes for everybody who participates. So this is the I Spy game.
Hang on, let me see if I can read. Who owns the big top?
Which is the circus and the carnival.
Oh, hang on. So this isn't just, it's not just an I Spy, or does it, or all the answers are in the village?
The answers are all in the village.
So the second question is, how long has Red Owl been in business?
There
you can see it now, since 1922.
Red Owl.
It's been in business 100 years.
How do you know?
Because I did the maths. Do I get a prize, Shelley?
Yeah, sure.
what are the prizes?
I have them under the village. Let's see. I have these glasses that the kiddos can put on. And when they shine, or when they look into lights, they can see whatever symbol is on the glasses. So let's say they have a gingerbread pair of glasses.
Yeah.
When they look at lights in a Christmas tree or in the village, they see gingerbread everywhere.
I am familiar with these glasses. Yeah, I know the ones. Yeah.
No, I really do.
You want some of those?
Yeah, I really want some of
them. Oh, you've got to fly all the way to the States.
Why?
And then, but you're not just, you've got to also get all the questions right. Now, I got one of them right, so I should get a pair of those glasses.
I have some snow globe kits so that the kids can make their own snow globes and some Christmas stickers and that kind of thing. So,
wow, this is good, isn't this? You're overly generous, young Shelley. So do you do this for charity? Do you raise any money for charity, or is it literally just come, have fun, and then leave? Is that it?
Yeah, pretty much that's what it's been. We're thinking about doing like a food pantry donation where people can bring a can of food, you know what I mean, and that kind of thing, and we donate it to our local food pantry.
Okay.
But we haven't done that yet, but we have thought about it.
Oh, well, I think you should really. The amount you give, people should give something back. If you've given them so much, yeah, definitely. Boys and girls, it's really hard to describe just how good Shelley's village is. It's huge. There's, like Shelley said, 100 and how many pieces did we say, Shelley?
126 buildings.
126 buildings.
Yes.
It's huge. There's so much to it, like loads of other intricate bits with the trains and the cars going around. There's moving. There's moving, apparently.
Yeah. There's animated pieces.
Animated pieces. Is that what you meant? Yeah.
Maybe.
I had more pieces, but I phased a couple out.
Oh, no.
There was a young man here last year. His name is Ian. He probably came 4 or 5 times. He just fell in love with the village. So I boxed up a bunch of the buildings that I wasn't going to use anymore. And we delivered them to him. And he just sent me a video the other day of him setting up his own Christmas village. So I got a video from his cousin who was building his train board and getting ready to set up his Christmas village. And then the boys that were here last weekend, when they got home, they said to their mom, "Where are the boxes of grandma's village pieces?" And she said, "They're, you know, in the garage." And so she went and got them, and the boys have been playing with their grandma's village pieces ever since they got home. So we have lots of nice stories of young people who are starting their own Christmas villages this year after coming here. So
yeah, this is good. So you're an influencer, Shelley.
Apparently.
So you got rid of some old pieces to make way for new pieces. Is that what you've done?
Pretty much, yes. I wanted things up at the top to be a little less crowded. And the rock formation that I do along the edges of the, if you can see where the different tiers come down, like the front of,
oh, yeah.
They're made out of a product called Shaper Sheet. And it was just like a white felt that has a foil backing. So you can just crinkle it into whatever shape you want, but it was all white. And I really didn't like it too much last year. So this year I painted it and then put snow all over it. So it looks just like the mountain.
I see. Mm. It does look like mountains. Yeah,
it does.
Are you going to let us have a look at Whoville?
Sure. So here is the Whoville tree.
Oh, look at that. How did you get it to bend at the top? Did you do that yourself?
I did.
Oh, wow.
How did you do that?
Yep. Again, so this doesn't work great on a podcast, listeners, so I'm going to describe it. It's a Christmas tree. It's a very well-decorated Christmas tree as well. It's loaded with decorations, but it curls over at the top.
Yeah, it curls over at the top.
At the top. Well said, Robin. So, like you'd expect a Whoville tree to curl. It's fantastic. Who's that? Is that the Grinch climbing in it?
Yep, that's the Grinch's bottom. Sticking out of the tree.
He's the Grinch climbing out of the tree.
Yep. And then this is Whoville.
Oh.
I love Whoville.
I love it.
Okay, you can't see it, boys and girls, but pretty much it looks just like Whoville. Is the Grinch on there?
We have the Grinch, who is up in his lair.
Up on Mount... What's it? Where does he live?
Mount Crumpet.
Is it Crumpet? No. Clumpet.
Yes, exactly. And then we have the Grinch once... He has his heart grown over here.
Oh, and there he is.
Aww. Yeah.
In his Santa costume.
So so this is our Grinch bed. This room is all things Grinch.
Grinch.
Yeah. Grinch. So this year I will have my daughters.
It's two daughters you've got, is that right?
Yep, we have two daughters and we'll be spending Christmas with them. They will be here. And then our grandson and our future son-in-law. And our existing son-in-law. And then after we opened our gifts and everything, then we will go over to my dad's house and we'll spend the whole day with him and my brother for Christmas.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's a proper family Christmas. Oh, what's this one?
What's this?
This was my mom's Sugartown village. So my mom just passed away just over a year ago. So my dad gave me her Sugartown village and it is set up next to the spinning tree.
You see that? It spins. Is it spinning?
I can't see it spin. Oh!
So do you have real Christmas trees, Shelley, or do you have not real?
Not real.
Do you never have real ones?
Oh, yes. I think it's probably about 2 years ago, we decided to get our first artificial tree, and this is our main tree.
Look at that. Goodness me. Oh, goodness. How long did it take you to decorate that then, Shelley?
It took me a couple of days because I had COVID.
That's not a couple of days.
Yeah.
That is Juno. It took us about an hour to do our tree.
Yeah. But I do miss, you know, having a real tree and going to get it and everything, but I don't miss the mess.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? The needles dropping.
Our needles keep dropping.
Yeah. Right, Robin, you got another question?
Have you ever seen a Christmas village bigger than yours?
I'm going to have to say yes.
Oh.
But it was in the Science Center in Pittsburgh.
Oh.
So they have a huge train display.
Oh,
so it's more
wow.
of a train display than a specific Christmas village.
Okay.
So I know you go on like Facebook groups and that. About making Christmas villages. Are there a lot of people on there that have got similar size ones to yours or is yours one of the bigger ones?
I think mine is probably one of the bigger ones. Some people don't have this amount of space, but they're very creative. I get a lot of ideas from the Facebook groups. I love watching everyone build their village. It's a lot of fun. There's some that are just so creative. With backdrops and you can't even really tell where the backdrop ends and the village starts. It's just amazing.
How long did it take to make your village this year?
This year it took me about 4 weeks because of the painting the rock and everything. So that took up a little bit of time to, you know, like it would have to dry for a day and then I have to spray the glue and then put the snow on. So it took a little while just to do that part. And then I just went from there once that was done.
Okay. So do you plan it out beforehand, or do you just sort of put it up bit by bit as it goes? Like, how do you decide where everything goes? Because you've got 126 pieces. It must be quite...
crammed in.
Well, not... I don't know if crammed in is the word, but I think just making sure that everything goes where you want it to go.
Yeah. So last year when I took it down, I made some notes in my phone of things that I wanted to change for this year. I wanted to elevate the middle tier houses up above the train a little bit more. So I had that on the list, and I wanted to elevate the carnival higher than it was before. Everything's pretty much in the same spot where it goes. Maybe a couple of, you know, houses I switched places with another house, and it's just kind of trial and error what fits well somewhere and what I like the look of somewhere. But for the most part, everything is kind of in its spot.
All right. Mm-hmm. How old's your grandson, Shelley?
14.
Oh, okay. So does he really like it, or is he getting a bit, is he too cool for it now?
No, actually, he's every year when he gets here, he spends a lot of time, you know, just hanging out and watching it and looking at it and that kind of thing.
I think you'd have to be a real Grinch not to get a buzz out of this village, because there is just so much going on. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It really is just a sight to behold. Boys and girls, like I said, this doesn't come across well on the podcast, just how good the village is, but it really is huge. There's so much going on. Shelley, do you remember last year you sent me a video clip? Could I ask you to do the same again this year? Would that be possible?
Yep, absolutely. I have a video that I posted when I finished it. I can send that and some photos.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
I think I said this last year and the year before, that when I posted on Facebook about your village, it was the single most popular post of the whole year. I got more likes and more shares for your Christmas village than any of the rubbish I came out with. So, yeah, it really is. I think until you get to see it, boys and girls, you can't really appreciate just how good it is. A garden centre near us has one, and it's probably not even a quarter of the size of this, but maybe not even that big. There's just so much going on. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Fun.
Have you girls ever watched A Christmas Story where Ralphie wants the rifle for Christmas?
Yeah, we watched that one.
They watched it for the first time this year, actually. We watched it a couple weeks ago, didn't we?
So there's the leg lamp in front of the house.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, and then you can see Ralphie in his pink nightmare costume.
Do you remember when he was dressed as a bunny?
Okay. And my future son-in-law bought me the Heinz store for Christmas a couple of years, and you can see the Heinz. Maybe you can see it. It's on a pickle. So that's where Heinz is based out of, is Pittsburgh.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And then this is Bedford Falls from It's a Wonderful Life.
I think I remember you telling me that was your favorite piece. Or was it the first piece you got, the Savers Alone?
This is where it all started. It was Bedford Falls Christmas Village, and it just grew from there.
Right, girls, you're getting restless now.
No.
Come on, sit down.
I'm trying to get comfy.
Right. No, I think we're going to run out of time now, so we're going to have to wrap it up, I think. It was lovely to see you again. Shelley, thank you so much for coming on. Are you going to say thank you to Shelley?
Thank you, Shelley.
I love seeing your village. Will you let us come and see it again next year?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, again, boys and girls, please check out the links in the show notes and on Facebook and have a look at Shelley's village. It's fantastic. I'll speak to you soon, Shelley. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Bye, girls.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I've got to say a massive thank you again to Shelley. She's so wonderful. And this is the thing. After we chatted, the rest of that evening, I just felt really happy. It was just so nice chatting to her. She's such a lovely person and such a wonderful Christmas village as well. Thanks again, Shelley. I really did appreciate you taking the time to chat to me and the girls again. And Merry Christmas to you and Frank. Now let's do this. So the next segment is... Oh, what? Okay, I've got a call from Skype again. I had this last two episodes. Hello?
Hey, Jack. George Podcast here, inventor of the podcast. We ran yet another focus group after your last
episode. Can I just say, I have been meaning to take on board your previous suggestions, so I'm keen to hear the new ones.
Oh, excellent. This is a nice change of pace. Didn't expect this. I let me take my tone down. I think I had my guard up there. I apologize, sir. Fantastic. Okay, so the first idea that the members of our latest focus group had is they would like to see you start a petition to force the world to always refer to Mrs. Claus as, quote, long-suffering.
I'm not really one for petitions. It's not. I'm not like trying to create a movement here. No.
Well, maybe you don't start the petition, but maybe you encourage other people to start the petition. You just get the ball rolling.
Well, should we do that now then? If there's anyone out there that wants to start a petition to so that they call, what is it, Mrs. Claus, they're going to call her what? Long?
Yeah, so we want the entire world to be forced to always refer to Mrs. Claus as,
what happens if they don't? What happens if they don't call her long-suffering?
There'll be a punishment, obviously.
Yeah, no, okay, right. Anyone out there, start a petition. Right, next one. Give me the next one.
Yeah. Okay, so the group as a whole would love for you to teach them the true meaning of December 5th, a.k.a. World Soil Day.
Do you know what? Being a gardener, that is something I should know a lot about, but I don't. What's the next one? Give me the next one.
Okay, another thing that we got a massive positive reaction to was the suggestion that you review the hot new Christmas movie, which is something called, I got it here somewhere, Sophie's Choice 2 Holiday Hijinks.
Yeah, okay, if that comes up on Netflix, I don't really do film reviews. You can send that to another, just give me, what's the last one?
I got a couple more, but a man in our group wanted to hear... A man in our group wanted to hear your thoughts about, quote, doing Christmas, but as if you're distracted by an eBay auction that's about to end.
Do you really think if I talk about this stuff, my listening figures are going to go up?
Finally, several members of our focus group suggested something for your Christmas quiz. Would you like to hear it?
Go on, Em.
Question. What do you get if you replace Jack as the host of the Total Christmas podcast with literally any other human being on the planet?
What's the answer?
Let me just find it here. Sorry. One second. Here it is. Answer. A much better podcast.
Will they have more listening figures?
Yeah.
I'm not going to put that in the quiz. Is your real name George Podcast?
Yeah. I mean, it's George.
Did you invent the podcast?
I think I was an early adopter.
Who are you?
I just run focus groups.
Well, focus off.
Oh, well, I have to go anyway because I just got a weird text from my mom's Christmas tree that says, your mom has a knife.
Thanks for being on again, George. Yeah, I'll take into account all your fantastic ideas. Please, could you do me a favor and not call ever again? Is that okay? Can we do that?
I could do that for a bit.
You're a good man.
Thank you. Bye!
Boys and girls, about 4 episodes ago, I interviewed the lovely Natalie Bickle, and after we talked about her fantastic book, it's called The Christmas Clue. You should check it out. It's a lovely Christmas book, ideal to start your own Christmas tradition with the family. We talked about how she found out about Santa. I meant to play the clip the week after our interview, but when we did the interview, I was recording the sound through the microphone on my computer, not my proper microphone. And so her audio was so much better than mine. And I spent ages trying to clear the sound up on my side of it. It didn't really do much, to be honest. It still sounds shabby. And then it got bumped a couple of episodes because I had so much in the other ones. So I'm playing this a little bit late. But now this is how Natalie found out the truth about Santa Claus.
So I remember being in my mom's car and I was in the back seat. My brother was in the front seat and there was something on the radio that made me question it. And I don't remember what it was. I don't remember what they were talking about, but I just remember in that moment, it was like this light bulb went off. And I asked my mom, I was like, is Santa Claus real? And I was 6 years old, by the way. So pretty young.
Well, that's young. That's really young. Yeah.
And I just remember her looking at me through the rearview mirror and saying, do you really want to know? And I like took a deep breath and said, yes. And that's when she told me. And then, of course, I proceeded to ask, well, what about the Tooth Fairy? And what about the Easter Bunny? So it was a really hard day. I'm pretty sure my brother reached back to the back seat with his hand and just like held my hand while my mom told me. But yeah, I was really young. And then I just remember keeping that a big secret for my other friends who still believed.
I can't believe your mum told you at six. I'm not. I want to keep lying to my kids until they're in their teens.
Yeah, I probably will too.
If this comes up, if they catch me in their bedroom putting the presents at the end of the bed, I'm still going to find a way to lie my way out of it. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
That's heartbreaking as well. That's the day the magic died.
I know. Yeah.
Two fairies, you killed the Easter Bunny. Goodness me.
Yeah, it was a lot at once. I think my parents kind of always had this rule of if we ask something, they're going to tell us the truth. But yeah, that was a rough day.
Yeah, I've got friends that have got that rule, but I haven't. I'm happy to lie to my kids all the time. All the time. Well, that is a fantastic story, but I think I've got to say, it makes me feel a little bit sad. But
I know,
It sounds sad when you're telling us the story, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think, honestly, being let in on the secret, it was kind of more fun to see other people still believe.
Ah, yeah, maybe. I guess, yeah, sometimes when you're in on it, on a secret like that, yeah, it does sort of make you enjoy things a bit, I guess, yeah. And of course, you still had, you know, your Christmas traditions. I guess that was around about the same time that the Christmas clue started, wasn't it? The scavenger hunt for your dad.
It was. Maybe that's why he started it. Maybe it was to make up for Santa.
Yeah. Your dad's a good man.
Yes.
Well, thanks again for coming on, Natalie.
Thank you, Jack.
So there we go. She learned it all in one go. Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy, they're all out the window. When she was only six. Can you believe that? She was such a delight to have on the show. She truly was. I'm hoping she'll come on the show again next year and we can chat again. But in the meantime, if you want to check out Natalie's book, it's Natalie Bickle and the book is called The Christmas Clue and it's all about a Christmas Day treasure hunt to find a present. It's a lovely book and like I said earlier, it's the perfect tradition to start with your own kids. So the links will be in the show notes and thanks again, Natalie.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol stars some Muppets, so let's play this as well.
This is what we call a Muppet Christmas Show.
This episode's version of A Christmas Carol and this episode's Muppets Christmas Special is Trolley. And I'm very angry about it. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Normally I'd go quite in depth. I'm not going in depth. They don't deserve it. Because I'm very angry about it. So it's called A Sesame Street Christmas Carol. And I thought it was going to be great. And I was completely wrong. So this was a straight to DVD thing that came out in 2006. And they pulled out none of the stops for this one. I don't even want to tell you the whole story, to be honest. But I'm going to, quickly. It's narrated by Tim Curry, so that's the one good thing it's got going for. I know Scott Newman, our US correspondent, he'll be happy about that because his favourite version of A Christmas Carol is the audiobook narrated by Tim Curry. Other than that, there's not much good going for this special, I can tell you that for nothing. The deal pretty much is that Oscar is the Scrooge character, and that's fine. Oscar is the perfect candidate to be Scrooge, but he's already done that in A Special Sesame Street Christmas from 1978, which I covered, I don't know, probably about a year ago, and I can tell you, that was pretty bad, but I almost think they did a better job in that version of A Christmas Carol than this one, which was, the whole thing of this was dedicated to it, where that one, not the whole thing, was. I'm not going into it. Right, there's hardly any characters in it. You've got Oscar, he's in his garbage can, up comes this little chap, like a delivery guy, he calls himself Joey Marley, he comes up trying to find Oscar, he finds his can, he says you're going to be visited by three ghostograms, not even ghosts, ghostograms, right, that's pretty much it, and he gives him this rusty old baked bean tin. So, out of this bean tin should pop the ghost of Christmas past, and this is the first thing I'm annoyed about, right, why not just get a Muppet to do that? Instead, no, it's computer generated. Now, I don't know if they blew the whole budget on their computer generated Muppets. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. This was 2006. I don't know how expensive the technology was at that time, but there ain't much budget spent on this. And if that's where it went, it was wasted because they could have just had normal Muppets and it would have been much better for it. Here's a line for you, yeah? Okay, right. I am the ghost of Christmas past. Long past? Your past. Well, not in this version, he's not. In this one, it's not particularly long, and it's definitely not your past, Oscar. I'm not kidding, either. So they show him two clips, neither of which have got anything to do with Oscar. The first one is taken from Christmas Eve on Sesame Street, and it's the subplot that they had in that special. If you've seen it, it's the Gift of the Magi version with Bert and Ernie. It's a fabulous piece of TV. They've chored it. They've just stolen it from that and chucked it in here, which is cheeky if you ask me. The second one is from Elmo Saves Christmas. That was from 1996. And it's just Big Bird singing a song. Well, do you know what Big Bird's singing? He's singing All I Want for Christmas Is You. But not that version. It's another version. And all Big Bird wants for Christmas is Mr. Snuffleupagus. I said that wrong. Let's try again. Mr. Snuffleupagus. And that's it. And then, like, the Ghost of Christmas Past leaves. It's like, well, what has that taught him? I can tell you, very little. So, next up, we've got the Ghost of Christmas Present. She's called Christmas Carol, and she's a Muppet, a computer-animated Muppet, dressed as a Christmas tree, or she looks like a Christmas tree, sort of she's shaped like one. And she's voiced by Kristen Chenoweth. Now, I really like Kristen Chenoweth. I fancy her, that's my point. I don't particularly care for her in this role, because this whole blooming special is just infuriating. The Ghost of Christmas Present shows four clips. Again, Oscar is not in a single one of them. First one is Elmo going to see Santa Claus, and they're just sort of chatting about Santa Claus and stuff. What that's got to do with Oscar, I do not know. So that first one is from Elmo's Happy Holidays, I think it's called. And then the next one is from Elmo Saves Christmas. In this one, Elmo's singing a song about why it can't be Christmas every day. If you've never seen that special, I'll probably cover it at a later date, but I'm not going to go into it. And I'll tell you why, because this one doesn't deserve me going deep on anything. Because it doesn't. Because it's just a rip-off of so much other stuff. Right, where was I? The next clip is from Elmo's Happy Holidays again. And this time it's teaching us about Hanukkah and about Kwanzaa. Right, that's fine. It's not Christmas though, is it? It's not like Christmas Present. That's Hanukkah Present or Kwanzaa Present. So don't start giving me Christmas. Ugh. Right, and then the final clip is just Keep Christmas With You, them singing that song. Now, that song was sung on Christmas Eve on Sesame Street, but it was also sung on Elmo Saves Christmas. And then at the end of it, Big Bird's there, and who should turn up but Snuffy? That's great. So this is my question. How's this Christmas Present? In Christmas Past, Big Bird was singing about wanting to see Snuffy, and this is like last year, and then this year he's here. But that's not what it is it? I've seen the special. So Snuffy does turn up that Christmas. So it's not Christmas Past, is it? Or they're both Christmas Past. They're either both Christmas Present or they're both Christmas Past. They're not one or the other. And to be honest, all those clips are old clips, so they're all Christmas Past. There's nothing from Christmas Present. And again, it's nothing to do with Oscar. So then she disappears. Her work here is done. It's not. And then the next one is like Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. He's a floating computer animated robot called iSam, although I think he just calls it Sam. And it just shows him a cartoon of the future, which again has nothing to do with Oscar. It's just like one of those futuristic things where, you know, where instead of eating a proper meal, you eat a tablet and that's your lunch sort of thing. It's just some humorous Christmas future thing. And then at the end of it, Oscar wakes up, the postman guy turns up, who was called Joey Marley, but he's like, I'm not Joey Marley, my name's Joey Dickens. Well, we recognise you, you know, you're no different. So, I don't even think this deserves me trying to explain to you what's going on, but the end of it is Oscar is slightly changed in that he actually does appreciate one thing about Christmas, and that's that it's only one day, and he loves the day after Christmas when it's all over. That's it. And I am just so incredibly disappointed. Can you tell by my tone and the way I'm behaving how disappointed I am? The problem I've got is, right, Muppets Christmas Carol is fantastic. It's incredible. And we all know that. That was 15 years, I think, roughly, before this came out. So you've got 15 years, you can do a whole new take on the story. They don't. They don't do a take on the story at all. They just bung a load of clips in, trying to suggest that this is going to change your story. It's not. We all know the story of A Christmas Carol. It's all about Scrooge's past, how Scrooge lives his life. This is not about that. This is a clip show, really, of other specials. And I own all the others already on DVD. So why do I want to watch these clips that have no relevance to the story of A Christmas Carol at all? They could have done it. It would have probably cost a bit more. Although maybe not. They didn't have to do the computer-generated stuff. I don't know how expensive that was. They could have easily done it, shown some flashbacks of when Oscar was a little boy, when he was a little grouch. They could have shown him what's happening now, you know. It would have been so easy. It would have been because so many different TV shows have done it in so many awful ways. But they could have done that. Instead, they didn't. They just like, this is Christmas. It's not even This Is Christmas Past. This is Christmas. This is Christmas. This is a cartoon of what. I'm just so angry. I'm so angry and so disappointed. That's what I think. That's the main thing, is the disappointment in what an awful. I'm banging on about it now, aren't I? Do you want me to just remind you how disappointed I am? I'm not going to remind you. You should already know. Pay attention. If you want to go and watch it, why? Don't go and watch it. But if you really want to go and watch it, why? I just said don't. It's on YouTube. It's free. Chuck it on in the background. Actually, I'll say this, right? If you haven't seen... Actually, no. I was going to say, if you haven't seen A Christmas Eve on Sesame Street, that's on YouTube anyway. Watch that instead. Don't watch this. It's trolley. Proper trolley. Can I move on? I've had enough of it. Merry Christmas. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, it's the quiz. You know the drill. You fast forward about 7 or 8 minutes to the next segment, and then we carry on. Those of you that aren't fast forwarding, I'm going to do 10 questions. Then I'm going to hum 5 songs. You're going to write down the answers, get all of them wrong, and then you're going to wish you'd never listened. Okay, so let's start with question number 1. In 2020, which song, 26 years after its first release, finally made it to number 1 in the UK singles chart? What was that song? Question number 2. Along with A Christmas Card, Queen Elizabeth II used to give what to her staff for Christmas every year? Approximately 1,500 in total. Question number a something. What sauce is... Oh, it's another Christmas pudding one, look. What sauce is the traditional accompaniment to Christmas pudding? What sauce is it that goes with Christmas pudding? That's the question. Question number whatever. Barbara Stanwyck is the main star of the 1945 film Christmas in where? Where's she having Christmas? Where's she spending her Christmas? Question number, huh? Who had the 1956 Christmas number one single with the song Just Walking in the Rain? It's not a Christmas song, but it was a Christmas number one. That's what makes it Christmassy. Okay, question number, I don't know. Which 2021 film is the first British Christmas rom-com with an almost entirely black cast? It was written, directed and stars Amil Amin as Melvin McKenzie, a British writer who returns home from Los Angeles to promote his new book. I have no idea. And I bet you don't either. Question number, huh? FC Santa Claus is a football club which between 2012 and 2019 was known as FC Santa Claus Arctic Circle. They play in the town of Rovaniemi? In which country? Rovaniemi. Question number, I don't know. Which top 10 hit for Dusty Springfield contains the lyrics, "Now there are no games to only pass the time, no more colouring books, no Christmas bells to chime"? Question number, oh, this one must be 9 because I think I've only got one more. Complete the title of the 1964 comedy sci-fi film Santa Claus Conquers the What? Do you know what? I've got a feeling it's not a comedy. I think it's only a comedy film because, like, Science Theatre 3000 took the mick out of it or something. It might be a comedy film. Last one. In 2019, which British male solo singer equaled Elvis Presley's UK record of 13 number one albums with the release of The Christmas Present? There you go, that's 10 questions. Now I'm going to hum 5 songs. Are you ready? That's all I'm doing. Number 2. Okay. Question number 3. Okay, question number 4. And the last one, easy one.
There we go. Those were your 10 questions and your 10 songs. Now, here come the answers.
Okay, boys and girls, from last week's episode, I have the fantastic Adam Kennedy, and he assures me that he's got all 15 of these right. So, this is question number one. In 2020, which song, 26 years after its first release, finally made it to number one in the UK singles chart? What was it, Adam?
I'm going with All I Want for Christmas Is You.
That's right. Well done. Good work. I heard the other day that she makes something like $5 or $6 million a year with that song. That's insane.
I'm not surprised. That's terrifying, though. That's too much money.
Well, not for me. Right, so question number two. Along with a Christmas card, Queen Elizabeth II used to give what to her staff for Christmas every year? Approximately 1,500 in total. I don't know if that's 1,500 a year or 1,500 in all the years she was doing it. What are you saying?
The total guess, I'm going to say plum pudding.
It was Christmas pudding. Yeah.
Wow.
You could have that. Yeah. We don't really call it, you don't hear it called plum pudding much, but it's the same thing. It's the same name. So well done. I'm impressed you got that for a guess. Okay. Question number three. Oh, it's Christmas pudding related. What sauce is the traditional accompaniment to Christmas pudding?
I should know this, but I don't. So I'm going to go with like what you put on duck, orange sauce.
No, we don't. I don't think I've ever seen it with orange sauce. But my mum gives us either cream or ice cream, but it's meant to be brandy butter.
Oh, okay.
Because you pour the brandy over and set light to it. That's why it's, you know, but the.
That's why I catch the smear.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay, next one. Barbara Stanwyck is the main star of the 1945 film Christmas in Where?
I think it's Christmas in Connecticut.
Well done. Yes, it is. Yeah, I saw that film a couple of years ago. I didn't hate it. It was all right. Question number something. Who had the 1956 Christmas number one single with the song Just Walking in the Rain?
Just Walking in the Rain. This one, I have no idea. So I kind of just went with the classic Cliff Richard.
Yeah, it's not. It was Johnny Ray. Have you heard of Johnny Ray?
I've heard of him, but I didn't know that that was even somewhat considered a Christmas song.
It's not a Christmas song. It was Christmas number one. That's why it's in the book. So don't blame me. Blame the book. Do you know, Johnny Ray, he's in the song Come On Eileen. You know Come On Eileen. Come on, yeah. Eileen. Yeah, it starts with, poor old Johnny Ray sounded sad upon the radio. He moved a million hearts in mono. There you go.
I think you should sing my next Christmas album for me.
Well, I am fantastic. Okay, question number something. Which 2021 film is the first British Christmas rom-com with an almost entirely black cast? It was written, directed and stars Amal Amin as Melvin McKenzie, a British writer who returns home from Los Angeles to promote his new book.
This one, I have to say, I have no idea. I don't even have an answer for this one.
Yeah, do you know what? I wouldn't have had a clue either, but it's called Boxing Day. Would you believe? I can't believe that completely passed me by last year when it came out. So
this is like one of those like holiday films. Remember Valentine's Day and all those other ones?
Oh, yeah, with the name Boxing Day, yeah. They did Christmas Eve. Have you ever seen that one with Patrick Stewart?
No, I never saw that one.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's all right. Okay, FC Santa Claus is a football club which between 2012 and 2019 was known as FC Santa Claus Arctic Circle. They play in the town of Rovaniemi in which country?
Oh, this one was tough for me. I don't know. I'm thinking Nordic, obviously, but I don't know, so I'm just going to say Iceland.
Well, it's Finland. And I think the thing is, like, Lapland is in Finland, you see, and so quite a lot of people from the UK will go for just a weekend, or even sometimes like a day, I think, fly over and go and see Santa Claus in Lapland and then come back. So I'm guessing that's why it's... I'm guessing that's why
well. It's... That's embarrassing since I have some lineage there. So,
Oh, yeah, you really have let yourself down. Well done. Yep. Okay, which top 10 hit for Dusty Springfield contains the lyrics, now there are no games to only pass the time, no more colouring books, no Christmas bells to chime?
Dusty's Christmas Wish.
Correct. I can't believe you got that one. Okay, no, it's called Going Back. I don't know if that's a Christmas song. It's got a Christmas line in it. I don't know. But there you go. Easy one now. Complete the title of the 1964 comedy... I don't know if it was a comedy. 1964 comedy sci-fi film, Santa Claus Conquers the...
Martians.
Well done. You've seen that?
I have seen that. I have the colorized... Yes.
Oh, wow.
It's boring. So boring.
Yeah, I heard that. Who covered it? It was in... I can't remember now. I listened to a podcast where they were talking about it, but I've never seen it. Okay, last one. In 2019, which British male solo singer equaled Elvis Presley's UK record of 13 number one albums with the release of The Christmas Present? Whom? Tell me, Adam.
Well, when I heard you ask the question, I ran over to my record case and I found it and I have it, and it's Robbie Williams.
That is so impressive. Is Robbie Williams big in Canada?
He's not, but my fiance is Irish, so she gives me a lot of that culture. And, you know, we have a VPN, so we're watching Graham Norton and all that stuff. So I get a lot of it.
Ah, yeah, he's massive in the UK. Not so big now, because, like, he's, you know, he's in his late 40s. I think he's about my age. But yeah, he was massive. And I really like most of his stuff, actually. I've always been a fan of his. Yeah. Okay, now it's the humming. So I'm not going to hum him again. So what did you get for the first one?
I had Christmas, Baby, Please Come Home.
Yes, well done. What about the second one?
This one drove me mad. I know this song, but I just couldn't get it. So I'm going to say Dusty's Christmas Wish.
Correct! Again! Yes! That's unbelievable! Yeah, who'd think that song that was never written could be the... No, it was Underneath the Tree.
You're that's the name here of the song.
It's where you should be. The snow is falling as the carolers sing. You're all that I need. Underneath the Tree.
Okay, who sings that?
Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, okay, I'm there.
Okay, how about the next one?
Up on the Housetop.
Yeah, does that get a lot of airplay? Do you know, it is Housetop, apparently. Does that get a lot of airplay?
It gets some airplay, but not as much as, like, you know, Santa Claus is Coming to Town and all that stuff.
Right, I don't think I've ever heard it in the UK. I think I've only ever heard it on other podcasts, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, how about the fourth one?
I got Driving Home for Christmas.
Does that get airplay in Canada?
It actually does. It actually does. Yeah, I've listened to your episodes where you talk to Scott about British Christmas songs and all that. And it's funny, some of them that they don't get in America, we actually do get here.
And that's one of them. There we go. Oh, that's good news. Okay, and the last one was an easy one.
Oh, Christmas Tree or Oh, Tannenbaum, however specific you want.
I'm annoyed that you said both, because if you'd only said one, I could have said wrong and said the other
one. You were ready.
I was ready, yeah, and I was going to penalise you a point, but you got it, so congratulations. Right, what's your total score then?
9.
Was it?
9 out of 15.
Yeah, it was, yeah. That's not bad. That could be worse.
There were hard questions. I'm proud of myself. I'm disappointed in your book, and the quiz book. Yes.
Okay. Well, Adam, because you scored so highly, do you want to plug your album for everyone?
Sure. Yeah. I've got an album full of comedy Christmas songs. It's called Adam Kennedy and His Creative Commoners, Literally Shrunk Down and Living in My Christmas Village. And you can find it on Bandcamp at adamkennedy.bandcamp.com. And I also have a single that came out this year, and I got two songs on there, and that's called Fruitcake from the Drive-Thru.
And it's fantastic. Highly recommended. If you didn't listen to the last episode, go back and listen to it, because we played some clips from it then. And I couldn't recommend it any higher. I will put the link in the show notes, and I'll also chuck something up on Facebook. So guys, go and check out Adam's album. Thanks for coming on, Adam. It's been a pleasure. Did you enjoy yourself?
I had a fantastic time, Jack. And I really just want to wish you and your family Merry Christmas.
Oh, I wish you a Merry Christmas as well. And your family. So, boys and girls, a few episodes ago, we started our Christmas ghost story with Tony Dixon, and we had two episodes, two segments, and then Tony got ill, and we missed one out. And then last week, my podcast was so full, I didn't really have time to stick it in. So what I thought I'd do, this is the last episode, what we're going to do is we're going to put all of the stories, that's including the first two segments, we're going to put them at the end of the show. So at the end of the podcast, after I've said goodbye, if you carry on listening, you'll get to hear the whole story as read by Tony Dixon, the host of Happy Halloween podcast. So there you go. And that'll keep Andy Williams happy with his Tales of Ghost Stories and Tales of the Glories of Christmases Long, Long Ago. Yeah, so stay tuned after the episode finishes and you'll get to hear the whole story. Boys and girls, Bob Baker's back with Wonderful Christmas Time. Take it away, Bob.
So, the time is right, the spirit is strong. It's total Christmas, and we can't be wrong. This is our last Wonderful Christmas Time, before the big day. Now, we have been suggesting things for you to do to enjoy the Christmas season in the US, the UK, and in Australia for the past 2 months. Now that we are down to the final days, I am sure you have a long to-do list and a lot to get done. I do not want to add any more stress or put pressure on you to make everything absolutely perfect. It won't be. And when something does go wrong, you know it will be that what makes this year the most memorable. However, you do need some small and quiet moments to reflect, savor, and celebrate for yourself. I am going to suggest 10 last-minute things for you to do that will lift your spirits. Now, these are all things that I've done, and they will feed your inner glow to carry you through the whole season and beyond. These are supposed to be no fuss and no work, just pure goodness. So here we go. Number 1. Collect money for the Salvation Army Red Kettle. It is only a 1 to 2 hour commitment. Pick a favorite local store or busy location and go all out. Santa hat, music, ring the bells, bring your family and make it fun. It will lift your spirits when you see how generous people can be. And the more festive you get, the more donations you will receive. Number 2. Go get some sand or kitty litter, some brown paper bags, and tea lights, and make luminarias. Then light them and set them out. The winter solstice is the darkest time of the year, and luminarias provide a soft glow on long winter nights. They look so beautiful on your stoop or steps and signal hope for brighter days to come. Number 3. Challenge a neighbor family to compete in an outdoor sports activity. Just bundle up, bring some cookies and hot chocolate, and go out and play. We've played broom ball, Quidditch on ice, or touch football in the snow. It is surprising how running around outside is such an incredible mood enhancer, and so is engaging with friends. Number 4. Don't drive, but take a walk to see the Christmas lights in your neighborhood. Enjoy the peaceful evening surroundings and the brisk chill in the air. Feel alive. Look up and appreciate the stars. Act like the Peanuts and open your mouth wide and sing Hark the Herald. Number 5. We all have a faraway friend or family member who we may have lost touch with or haven't spoken to for a while. Maybe it's a friend from college and you drifted apart, or someone who moved away. Reach out to one of these individuals at the holidays. And I'm not talking a Facebook connection where you reach out virtually and follow that person. I mean an actual phone call where you can touch base, talk old times, see how he or she is doing, and end on a really happy note. The message you want to send is that this person meant something to you in your life, and you want them to know it. Number 6. Do some random acts of kindness. When you're at a gas station or a fast food drive-thru, pay the bill for another customer. Find a VFW or an American Legion Hall. Now, these are clubs that allow veterans to gather and enjoy drinks and buy a round for the whole bar. Or buy some scratch-off lottery tickets or gift cards and pass them out to strangers, frazzled parents, or people who just look like they need them. Number 7. Listen to the audiobook of A Christmas Carol. You may not have time to read it right now, but you can play it while you do other things. Despite the fact that we know the story, and as Jack knows, we have seen so many different versions of it, there is nothing better than going back to the original text. It is more meaningful, and it is important to frame the purpose for the celebration before the craziness begins. Number 8. If you know of someone who has had a bad year, maybe who experienced the loss of a loved one, or a major illness or surgery, or someone who is just a charitable or giving person, buy them a copy of The Greatest Gift. This is the book on which It's a Wonderful Life is based. I usually will find a special leather-bound copy. Put in a note that says, "Remember, no man is a failure who has friends," and send it anonymously to this person. Never, ever tell them where it came from. Number 9. Throw open your garage and host a spontaneous open house. Now, I know it helps if you have a mobile tiki bar, but if not, just set up a table. Bring out some drinks and snacks. hang up some lights, and invite anyone who is walking by to stop. You can meet some new friends and visit with old ones. It is fun to see who you can get to stop by and share the merriment. And now number 10. If you know someone who lives away from their extended family and is alone on Christmas Eve, combine forces and invite them to join your celebration. I know that you may feel that this is an imposition on your family and your own personal merrymaking, but trust me, some of our best Christmases involved special guests. We have had our senior neighbors over for dinner who used to travel but couldn't do so any longer. We had dinner and crackers and wore crowns, and my children showed them all of our decorations. It was so very touching. And for 10 years, we would invite two other families over to celebrate with us. We would rotate amongst our homes, everybody contributing food and drink, and we would have themes to inspire our dress, decorations, and gifts. Themes like redneck, dysfunctional family, or international. Plus, we would always have a game to play. Very, very fun. I want to thank all of you who have listened to me over the past few weeks, and a special nod to those of you who contributed your suggestions. I am hoping that we inspired you to try something new that may become a future holiday tradition. I so love the fact that we may live in other countries on separate continents, and yet we share a common love for Christmas and a human bond that brings us together despite whatever differences we may have. I wish you the very merriest and happiest Christmas and all of the joy and success that a new year can bring.
Well, wasn't that what a Christmas season is all about? Thank you so much for that, Bob. I think that is the perfect way to end the show. I really like your ideas, Bob. I'm hoping I can put some of them into practice myself. Boys and girls, once again, I've got to say a massive thank you to Bob. He's worked really hard for the show and I really appreciate it. And that segment, I really do think, is the best one yet. Thank you so much, Bob. Right, that's pretty much it. Just the recommendation and the goodbye. So here we go. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation is my book, Thursday Nights. Actually, it's not my book. Thursday Nights All Right by Jack Andrews. That's not what I'm talking about. No, what I'm talking about is my daughter's podcast. I believe they are the youngest podcasters in the world. Their podcast is called I'm Not Complaining with Robin and Juno. It's up to about 70-odd episodes now. It used to be weekly, then it was occasionally it's fortnightly, and then they've been a bit lax lately. There's a lot going on with Christmas and nativity plays and all that sort of stuff, so they're very busy girls. But yeah, check out the podcast. It's really cute. Each episode's about 10 minutes long. They just talk about what they've been up to, tell a joke, do a book review. It's just cute stuff, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. So the podcast is called I'm Not Complaining with Robin and Juno. If you go onto the show notes, there'll be a link on there. I always put their episodes up on Facebook when they come out as well. So please check out their show. And if you've got any questions to ask them, there is a segment called Ask Robin and Juno. They'd love to hear them because they love the feedback that they get. And they don't get a massive amount. I won't lie, they haven't got many listeners. I've only got 4. I think they've got 2. But they'd love it if they had more listeners, and they'd love it if you were one of those listeners. So yeah, check out I'm Not Complaining with Robin and Juno. And also, actually, while I'm here, another recommendation. Have you thought about reading a book, maybe a Kindle book, called Thursday Night's Alright by Jack Andrews? I'd check it out if I were you. It's the funniest book ever written, in my opinion, and it's $3 and it's on Amazon. And have I told you enough about it? I don't think I have. I feel like I need to go more in depth about how you can go. No, let's just move on. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a massive thank you to everyone who's listened to the show this year, and of course everyone who's contributed, which I really do appreciate. It's been a great year. I love doing the podcast, and I want to wish you and all your family a very Merry Christmas. Now, I do the podcast for free. There's no advertising apart from my book, which if you want to buy my book, it's called Thursday Night's Alright by Jack Andrews. But if you don't want to buy my book and you want to give to the podcast, well, I don't have a Patreon and I don't want your money. But this time of year, there are a lot of people out there that really do suffer. And to quote Dickens, because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. So if you did want to give something to the podcast, I don't want it.
but I would like you to give it to charity. So if you did want to make a donation, there are hundreds of worthy charities out there, and I'm sure that there are many that you hold dear. So please do that instead of donating to the podcast, because you can't donate to the podcast. It's as simple as that. There's no way to do it. I hope you and all yours have a fantastic Christmas. I will be back for a very short show on Christmas Day, although depending on where you are, you might get it Christmas Eve. Check it out, have a listen. It'll only be like 10, 15 minutes tops, just to wish you all a Merry Christmas. If you're having a tough time of it through the Christmas season, I'm always checking my emails. If you just want to drop me an email, then I'll do my best to give you some words of comfort. But I hope you have a fantastic Christmas, and I wish you all the very, very best. One last thing before I go. The listening figures plummet in January, and that's understandable. Most people don't necessarily want to think about Christmas all year round, but the podcast is still going to be there. I have a short break through January, and then I'll be back again either at the end of January, the start of February. That's when the podcast starts up again. If you want a shot of Christmas every 2 weeks, then subscribe to the podcast and it will come up in your feed, and you can be part of the show throughout the year. I'd like to quote my friends that live on Sesame Street now and say, keep Christmas with you all through the year. That's it. I can't remember the rest of the words, but you get the idea. So I'll be back again on Christmas Day. But in the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Christmas.
Between the Lights by E.F. Benson. The day had been one unceasing fall of snow, from sunrise until the gradual withdrawal of the vague white light outside indicated that the sun had set again. But, as usual at this hospitable and delightful house of Everard Chandler, where I often spent Christmas, and was spending it now, there had been no lack of entertainment, and the hours passed with a rapidity that had surprised us. A short billiard tournament had filled up the time between breakfast and lunch, with badminton and the morning papers for those who were temporarily not engaged, while afterwards the interval till tea time had been occupied by the majority of the party in a huge game of hide-and-seek all over the house, barring the billiard room, which was a sanctuary for anyone who desired peace. But few had done that. The enchantment of Christmas, I must suppose, had, like some spell, made children of us again, and it was with palsied terror and trembling misgivings that we had tiptoed up and down the dim passages, from any corner of which some wild screaming form might dart out on us. Then, wearied with exercise and emotion, we had assembled again for tea in the hall, a room of shadows and panels of which light from the wide-open fireplace, where there burned a divine mixture of peat and logs, flickered and grew bright again on the walls. Then, as was proper, ghost stories, for the narration of which electric light was put out, so that the listeners might conjecture anything they pleased to be lurking in the corners, succeeded, and we vied with each other in the blood, bones, skeletons, armor, and shrieks. I had just given my contribution, and was reflecting with some complacency that probably the worst was now known, when Everard, who had not yet administered to the horror of his guests, spoke. He was sitting opposite me in a full blaze of the fire, looking, after the illness he had gone through during the autumn, still rather pale and delicate. All the same, he had been among the boldest and best in the exploration of dark places that afternoon, and the look on his face now rather startled me. "No, I don't mind that sort of thing," he said. "The paraphernalia of ghosts has become somehow rather hackneyed, and when I hear of screams and skeletons, I feel I am on familiar ground, and can at least hide my head under the bedclothes." "Ah, but the bedclothes were twitched away by my skeleton," said I, in self-defense. "I know, but I don't even mind that. Why, there are 7, 8 skeletons in this room now, covered in blood and skin and other horrors. No, the nightmare of one's childhood were the really frightening things. because they were vague. There was the true atmosphere of horror about them because one did not know what one feared. Now, if one could recapture that, Mrs. Chandler got quickly out of her seat. "Oh, Everard," she said, "surely you do not wish to recapture it again. I should have thought once was enough." This was enchanting. A chorus of invitation asked him to proceed. The real, true ghost story firsthand, which was what seemed to be indicated, was too precious a thing to lose. Everard laughed. "No, dear, I do not want to recapture it again at all," he said to his wife. Then to us, "But really the nightmare, perhaps, to which I was referring, is of the vaguest and most unsatisfactory kind. It has no apparatus about it at all. You will probably all say that it was nothing and wonder why I was frightened. But in a way, it frightened me out of my wits, and I only just saw something without being able to swear what it was, and heard something which might have been a falling stone." "Anyhow, tell us about the falling stone," I said. There was a stir of movement about to circle round the fire, and the movement was not of purely physical order. It was as if, this is only what I personally felt, it was as if the childish gaiety of the hours we passed that day was suddenly withdrawn. We had jested on certain subjects. We had played hide-and-seek with all the power of earnestness that was in us. But now, so it seemed to me, there was going to be a real hide-and-seek. Real terrors were going to lurk in the dark corners, or if not real terrors, terrors so convincing to assume the garb of reality, were going to pounce on us. And Mrs. Chandler's exclamation as she sat down again, "Oh, Everard, won't it excite you?" tended in any case to excite us. The room still remained in dubious darkness, except for the sudden light disclosed on the walls by leaping flames on the hearth, and there was wide field for conjecture as to what might lurk in the dim corners. Everard, moreover, who had been sitting in bright light before, was banished by the extinction of some flaming log into the shadows. A voice alone spoke to us as he sat back in his low chair, a voice rather slow, but very distinct. "Last year," he said, "on the 24th of December, we were down here, as usual, Amy and I, for Christmas. Several of you who are here now were here then, three or four of you at least. I was one of these, but like the others, kept silence, for the identification, so it seemed to me, was not asked for," and he went on again without a pause. "Those of you who were here then," he said, "and are here now, will remember how very warm it was this day year. You will remember, too, that we played croquet that day on the lawn. It was perhaps a little cold for croquet, and we played it rather in order to be able to say, with sound evidence to back the statement, that we had done so." Then he turned and addressed the whole little circle. "We played ties of half games," he said, "just as we have played billiards today, and it was certainly as warm on the lawn then as it was in the billiard room this morning, directly after breakfast, while today I should not wonder if there was 3 feet of snow outside, more probably." A sudden draft fluted in the chimney, and the fire flared up as the current of air caught it. The wind also drove the snow against the windows, and as he said, "Listen," we heard a soft scurrying of the falling flakes against the panes, like the soft tread of many little people who stepped lightly, but with the persistence of multitudes who were flocking to some rendezvous. Hundreds of little feet seemed to be gathering outside. Only the glass kept them out. And of the 8 skeletons present, 4 or 5, anyhow, turned and looked out the windows. These were small-paned with leaden bars. On the leaden bars, little heaps of snow had accumulated, but there was nothing else to be seen. "Yes, last Christmas Eve was very warm and sunny," went on Everard. "We had no frost that autumn, and a temerarious dahlia was still in flower. I have always thought that it must have been mad." He paused a moment. "And I wonder if I were not mad, too," he added. No one interrupted him. There was something arresting. I must suppose it was in what he was saying. It chimed in anyhow with the hide-and-seek, with a suggestion of the lonely snow. Mrs. Chandler had sat down again, but I heard her stir in her chair. But never was there a gay party so reduced as we had been in the last 5 minutes. Instead of laughing at ourselves for playing silly games, we were all taking a serious game seriously. "Anyhow, I was sitting out," he said to me, "while you and my wife played your half game of croquet. Then it struck me that it was not so warm as I had supposed, because quite suddenly I shivered, and shivering I looked up. But I did not see you and her playing croquet at all. I saw something which had no relation to you and her. At least, I hope not. Now, the angler lands his fish, the stalker kills his stag, and the speaker holds his audience. And as the fish is gaffed and the stag is shot, so were we held. There was no getting away till he had finished with us. You all know the croquet lawn," he said, "and how it is bounded all around by a flower border with a brick wall behind it, through which, you will remember, there is only one gate. Well, I looked up and saw that the lawn, I could for one moment see it was still a lawn, was shrinking, and the walls closing in upon it. As they closed in, too, they grew higher, and simultaneously the light began to fade and be sucked from the sky, till it grew quite dark overhead, and only a glimmer of light came in through the gate. There was, as I told you, a dahlia in flower that day, and as this dreadful darkness and bewilderment came over me, I remember that my eyes sought it in a kind of despair, holding on, as it were, to any familiar object. But it was no longer a dahlia, and for the red of its petals I only saw the red of some feeble firelight. And at that moment the hallucination was complete. I was no longer sitting on the lawn watching croquet, but I was in a low-roofed room, something like a cattle shed, but round. Close above my head, though I was sitting down, ran rafters from wall to wall. It was nearly dark, but little light came in from the door opposite me, which seemed to lead into a passage that communicated with the exterior of the place. Little, however, of the wholesome air came into this dreadful den. The atmosphere was oppressive and foul, beyond all telling. It was as if for years it had been the place of some human menagerie, and for those years it had been uncleaned and unsweetened by the winds of heaven. Yet that oppressiveness was nothing to the awful horror of the place from the view of the spirit. Some dreadful atmosphere of crime and abomination dwelt heavy in it. Its denizens, whoever they were scarce human, so it seemed to me, and though men and women were akin more to the beasts of the field. And in addition, there was present to me some sense of the weight of years. I had been taken and thrust down into some epoch of dim antiquity. He paused a moment, and the fire on the hearth leaped up for a second and then died down again. But in that gleam I saw all the faces were turned to Everard, and that all wore some look of dreadful expectancy. Certainly I felt it myself, and waited in sort of a shrinking horror for what was coming. "As I told you," he continued, "where there had been that unseasonable dahlia, there now burned a dim firelight. My eyes were drawn there. Shapes were gathered around it. What they were, I could not at first see. Then, perhaps, my eyes got more accustomed to the dusk, or the fire burned better, for I perceived that they were of human form, but very small. For when one rose with a horrible clattering to his feet, his head was still some inches off the low roof. He was dressed in sort of a shirt that came to his knees, but his arms were bare and covered with hair. Then the gesticulation and chattering increased, and I knew that they were talking about me, for they kept pointing in my direction. At that, my horror suddenly deepened, for I became aware that I was powerless and could not move hand or foot. A helpless, nightmare impotence had possession of me. I could not lift a finger or turn my head, and in the paralysis of that fear, I tried to scream, but not a sound could I utter. All this, I suppose, took place with the instantaneousness of a dream, for at once, and without transition, the whole thing had vanished, and I was back on the lawn again, while the stroke for which my wife was aiming was still unplayed, but my face was dripping with perspiration, and I was trembling all over. Now, you may all say that I had fallen asleep, and had a sudden nightmare. That may be so, but I was conscious of no sense of sleepiness before, and I was conscious of none afterwards. It was as if someone had held a book before me, whisked the pages open for a second, and then closed them again. Somebody, I don't know who, got up from his chair with a sudden movement that made me start, and turned on the electric light. I do not mind confessing that I was rather glad of this. Everard laughed. Really, I feel like Hamlet in the play scene, he said, as if there was a guilty uncle present. Shall I go on? I don't think anyone replied, and he went on. Well, let us say for the moment that it was not a dream exactly, but a hallucination. Whichever it was, in any case, it haunted me for months. I think it was never quite out of my mind, but lingered somewhere in the dusk of consciousness, sometimes sleeping quietly, so to speak, but sometimes stirring in its sleep. It was no good my telling myself that I was disquieting myself in vain, for it was as if something had actually entered into my very soul, as if some seed of horror had been planted there. And as the weeks went on and the seed began to sprout, so that I could no longer even tell myself that the vision had been a moment's disorderment only. I can't say that it actually affected my health. I did not, as far as I know, sleep or eat insufficiently. But morning after morning I used to wake, not gradually and through pleasant dozings into full consciousness, but with absolute suddenness, and find myself plunged into an abyss of despair. Often, too, eating or drinking, I used to pause and wonder if it was worthwhile. Eventually, I told two people about my trouble, hoping that perhaps the mere communication would help matters, hoping also, but very distantly, that I thought I could not believe at present the digestion or the obscurities of the nervous system were at fault. A doctor by some simple dose might convince me of it. In other words, I told my wife, who laughed at me, and my doctor, who laughed also, and assured me that my health was quite unnecessarily robust. At the same time, he suggested that the change of air and scene does wonders for the delusions that exist merely in the imagination. He also told me, in answer to a direct question, that he would stake his reputation on the certainty that I was not going mad. Well, we went up to London as usual for the seasons, and though nothing whatsoever occurred to remind me in any way of that single moment on Christmas Eve, the reminding was seen to all right. The moment itself took care of that, for instead of fading, as is the way of sleeping or waking dreams, it grew every day more vivid and ate, so to speak, like some corrosive acid into my mind etching itself there. And to London succeeded Scotland. I took last year for the first time a small forest up in Sutherland called Glen Callan, very remote and wild, but affording excellent stalking. It was not far from the sea, and the gillies used always to warn me to carry a compass on the hill, but sea mists were liable to come up with a frightful rapidity, and there was always a danger of being caught by one, and of having perhaps to wait hours till it cleared again. This at first I always used to do, but, as everyone knows, any precaution that one takes, which continues to be unjustified, gets gradually relaxed. And at the end of a few weeks, since the weather had been uniformly clear, it was natural that, as often as not, my compass remained at home. One day, the stalk took me onto a part of my ground that I had seldom seen before, a very high table land on the limit of my forest, which went down very steeply on one side to a loch that lay below it, and on the other by gentler gradations to the river that came from the loch, 6 miles below which stood the lodge. The wind had necessitated our climbing up, or so my stalker had insisted, not by the easy way, but up the crags from the loch. I had argued the point with him, for it seemed to me that it was impossible that the deer could get our scent even if we went by the more natural path. But he still held to his opinion, and therefore, since after all this was part of the job, I yielded. A dreadful climb we had of it, over big boulders with deep holes in between, masked by clumps of heather, so that a wary eye and a prodding stick were necessary for each step if one wished to avoid broken bones. Adders also literally swarmed in the heather. We must have seen a dozen at least on our way up. And adders are a beast for which I have no manner of use. But a couple of hours saw us up to the top, only to find that the stalker had been utterly at fault, and that the deer must quite infallibly have got wind of us, if they had remained in the place where we last saw them. That, when we could spy the ground again, we saw had happened. In any case, they had gone. The man insisted the wind had changed, a palpably stupid excuse, and I wondered at that moment what other reason he had, for reason I felt sure there must be, for not wishing to take what would clearly have been the better route. But this piece of bad management did not spoil our luck, for within an hour we had spied more deer, and about 2 o'clock I got a shot, killing a heavy stag. Then, sitting on the heather, I ate lunch, and enjoyed a well-earned bask and a smoke in the sun. The pony, meantime, had been saddled with a stag and was plodding homewards. The morning had been extraordinarily warm, with a little wind blowing off the sea, which lay a few miles off, sparkling beneath a blue haze. And all morning, in spite of our abominable climb, I had had an extreme sense of peace. So much so that several times I had probed my mind, so to speak, to find if the horror still lingered there, but I could scarcely get any response from it. Never since Christmas had I been so free of fear, and it was with a great sense of repose, both physical and spiritual, that I lay looking up into the blue sky, watching my smoke whorls curl slowly away into nothingness. But I was not allowed to take my ease for long, for Sandy came and begged that I would move. The weather had changed, he said. The wind had shifted again, and he wanted me to be off this high ground and on a path again as soon as possible, because it looked to him as if sea mist would presently come up. "And yon's a bad place to get down in the mist," he added, nodding towards the crags we had come up. I looked at the man in amazement, for to our right lay a gentle slope down on the river, and there was now no possible reason for again tackling those hideous rocks up which we had climbed this morning. More than ever, I was sure he had some secret reason for not wishing to go the obvious way. But about one thing he was certainly right. The mist was coming up from the sea, and I felt in my pocket for the compass, and forgotten that I had forgotten to bring it. Then there followed a curious scene which lost us time that we could really ill afford to waste. I insisted on going down by the way the common sense directed, he imploring me to take his word for it that the crags were the better way. Eventually, I marched off to the easiest descent and told him not to argue any more, but follow. What annoyed me about him was that he would only give the most senseless reasons for preferring the crags. There were mossy places, he said, on the way I wished to go, a thing patently false, since the summer had been one spell of unbroken weather, or it was longer, also obviously untrue, or there were many vipers about. But seeing that none of these arguments produced any effect, at last he desisted and came after me in silence. We were not yet half down when the mist was upon us, shooting up from the valley like a broken water of wave, and in 3 minutes we were enveloped in a cloud of fog so thick that we could barely see a dozen yards in front of us. It was therefore another cause for self-congratulations that we were not now, as we should otherwise have been, precariously clambering on the face of those crags up which we had come with such difficulty in the morning. as I rather prided myself on my powers of generalship in the matter of direction. I continued leading, feeling sure that before long we should strike the track by the river. More than all, the absolute freedom from fear elated me. Since Christmas, I had not known the instinctive joy of that. I felt like a schoolboy home for the holidays. But the mist grew thicker and thicker, and whether it was that real rain clouds had formed above it, or that it was of an extraordinary density itself, I got wetter in the next hour than I have ever been before or since. The wet seemed to penetrate the skin and chill the very bones, and still there was no sign of the track for which I was making. Behind me, muttering to himself, followed the stalker, but his arguments and his protestations were dumb, and it seemed as if he kept close to me, as if afraid. Now, there are many unpleasant companions in this world. I would not, for instance, care to be on the hill with a drunkard or a maniac, but worse than either, I think, is a frightened man, because his trouble is infectious and insensibly. I began to be afraid of being frightened, too. From that, it is but a short step to fear. Other perplexities, too, beset us. At one time, we seemed to be walking on flat ground. At another, I felt sure we were climbing again. Whereas, all the time, we ought to have been descending, unless we had missed the way very badly indeed. Also, for the month was October. It was beginning to get dark, and it was with a sense of relief that I remembered that the full moon would rise soon after sunset. But it had grown very much colder, and soon, instead of rain, we found we were walking through a steady fall of snow. Things were pretty bad, but then for the moment they seemed to mend, for far away to the left, I suddenly heard the brawling of the river. It should, it is true, have been straight in front of me, and we were perhaps a mile out of our way. But this was better than the blind wandering of the last hour, and turning to the left, I walked towards it. But before I had gone 100 yards, I heard a sudden choked cry behind me, and just saw Sandy's form flying, as if in terror of pursuit, into the mists. I called to him, but got no reply, and heard only the spurned stones of his running. What had frightened him, I had no idea. But certainly with his disappearance, the infection of his fear disappeared also, and I went on, I may almost say with gaiety. On the moment, however, I saw a sudden, well-defined blackness in front of me, and before I knew what I was doing, I was half stumbling, half walking up a very steep grass slope. During the last few minutes, the wind had got up, and the driving snow was peculiarly uncomfortable. But there had been a certain consolation in thinking that the wind would soon disperse these mists, and I had nothing more than a moonlight walk home. But as I paused on the slope, I became aware of two things. One, that the blackness in front of me was very close. The other, that whatever it was, it sheltered me from the snow. So I climbed on a dozen yards into its friendly shelter, for it seemed to me to be friendly. A wall some 12 feet high crowned the slope. And exactly where I struck it there was a hole in it, a door, rather, through which a little light appeared. Wondering at this, I pushed on, bending down, for the passageway was very low, and then a dozen yards came out on the other side. Just as I did this, the sky suddenly grew lighter, the wind, I suppose, having dispersed of the mists, and the moon, though not yet visible through the flying skirts of clouds, made sufficient illumination. I was in a circular enclosure, and above me there projected from the walls some 4 feet from the ground broken stones which must have been intended to support a floor. Then, simultaneously, two things occurred. The whole of my 9 months' terror came back to me, for I saw that the vision in the garden was fulfilled, and at that same moment I saw, stealing towards me, a little figure of a man, but only about 3'6" in height. That, my eyes told me, my ears told me that he stumbled on a stone. My nostrils told me that the air I breathed was of an overpowering foulness. And my soul told me that it was sick unto death. I think I tried to scream, but could not. I know I tried to move, and could not. And it crept closer. Then I suppose the terror which had me spellbound so spurred me that I must move. For next moment I heard a cry break from my lips, and was stumbling through the passage. I made one leap of it down the grass slope and ran as I hope I never have to run again. What direction I took, I did not pause to consider, so long as I put distance between me and that place. Luck, however, favored me, and before long, I struck the track by the river and an hour afterwards reached the lodge. Next day, I developed a chill, and as you know, pneumonia laid me on my back for 6 weeks. Well, that is my story, and there are many explanations. You may say that I fell asleep on the lawn, and was reminded of that by finding myself, under discouraging circumstances, in an old pig's castle, where sheep or a goat that, like myself, had taken shelter from the storm was moving about. Yes, there are hundreds of ways in which you may explain it, but the coincidence was an odd one, and those who believe in second sight might find an instance of their hobby in it. And is that all? I asked. Yes, it was nearly too much for me. I think the dressing bell has sounded.